enterprise risk management principles to the actual Casualty Actuarial Society. My name is Steve Johnston, and I am the chair of the committee, the CAS for the ERM committee. In the printed materials, I guess I just want to give a little bit of a heads up. In the printed materials, there was a description that there would be two presentations, one as respects ERM for a nonprofit and one for a PNC insurance company, and I was kind of as surprised as anybody to see that second one, that it's just going to be ERM as applied to the Casualty Actuarial Society. I'm an eternal optimist, you know, good news, bad news. I guess the bad news is there won't be a session as in the printed material. The good news is this is the last session. I can't fill up an hour. I was coming expecting to fill up half an hour, so we'll be out a little bit early. Having gone through these as a part of the audience, I know that you get towards the end of this and the brain can only absorb what the tail end can endure, so it's not bad to have the last session maybe go a little bit short. Is everyone here in some way affiliated with the Casualty Actuarial Society, you know, fellow, associate, student, employee? So this should hit right to home, and that this is the actual application of ERM principles to the Casualty Actuarial Society. Now, the CAS has a centennial goal. Does anyone know when the CAS will be 100 years old? 2014, very good. And I can remember that from all those proceedings that would have something to the effect of 1914 on the front of them. So we have a goal, a centennial goal, and I think that's great. I think whether it's an individual or an organization, you're always better off to have a goal, to have it written down, to have it be specific, to have a time frame that you're going to attain the goal. So this is our centennial goal for the Casualty Actuarial Society, that we will be recognized globally as a leading resource in educating casualty actuaries and conducting research in casualty actuarial science. CAS members will advance their expertise in pricing, reserving, and capital modeling, and leverage their skills in risk analysis to become recognized as experts in the evolution of enterprise risks, particularly for the property and casualty industry. So enterprise risk management is embedded right into the centennial goal. I was a part of a group, it's been several years ago now in Philadelphia. It was called a leadership meeting, and if you were chair of a committee, you went to this, and it was the first one I'd ever attended. At the time, I was chair of the investment committee, the first one that the CAS had. So this topic of a centennial goal first came up, and at that time we had a consultant there in the room, and I was just kind of happy to be there. You know, it seemed like all the heavy hitters were there, and then there's me sitting there, and I got to participate, so it was kind of fun. And the consultant was kind of leading us through how to come up with a goal, and we talked about mission statements. And does anyone know the mission statement for Disney? Here we are in Walt Disney World. It's to make people happy. It's very short, you know, to make people happy. That's the mission statement of Disney. So as we were working through this and trying to apply similar principles to the CAS, I thought Glenn Myers had a good observation. He thought our mission was to help people handle risk. And I think that while, you know, this is our centennial goal and not our mission statement, that really does hit the nail on the head. And we are here to help people handle risk. And we want to lead by example and actually apply those risk management skills to the CAS. So then as a little background leading from this, in September of 2004, the CAS board discussed how the CAS might become an example of ERM best practices. And the board then established a task force to recommend a process under which the CAS could become an example of ERM best practices within the nonprofit area. So the idea was that, you know, other nonprofits, we might be an example of how other nonprofits could apply ERM to their organizations. So the board authorized a task force to develop this ERM program, to write an article to be prepared by the executive director, and to prepare a report for the board. And the key steps that the task force came up with, and this is, I think, pretty common to an ERM program for either the CAS or other nonprofits or even profit-oriented organizations, was be to identify key risks and opportunities facing the CAS, prioritize those risks and opportunities, determine a method of quantifying each of the risks and opportunities, and to consider the correlations, then to establish a culture of internal support for the process of identifying key roles of staff and optimizing results. And number five, articulate risk mitigation strategies and opportunity maximization strategies, which will be dynamic and effective, develop a monitoring strategy, and provide for periodic updates. So these are the key steps that the task force identified. Then the task force made a recommendation to the board that the board accept the report. Pretty smart task force, you know, accept the report, and that the board establish a standing ERM committee, and that's the committee that I'm chair of, separate from the task force committee, and that a representative of each of the executive areas should be on this standing committee. I mean, we want this to be holistic and that everybody should be involved. And then that the board dismiss the ERM task force. This really shows how smart they are, that the board go ahead and dismiss the task force and thank them for their efforts. And that happened last September. The board did dismiss the task force, and we started up with this ERM committee. I was called, you know, to see if I would volunteer, and I was happy to do so. And we started with our first meeting of the task of our committee in December. The task force report prioritized the risks and opportunities facing the CAS. They were broken down into two categories, strategic and operational. And I kind of asked John Kolar, who was on the task force, you know, a lot of times I read more than just two categories, strategic and operational. You'll see hazard and different ways of categorizing it. He had a great answer. He said, the main point is we want to make sure to have the risks and opportunities there. How we group them would be less important. So here we have our risks and opportunities grouped into either strategic or operational. And these are the top risks that the task force came up with, and opportunities divided into strategic and operational. And we'll talk about each one of them individually. On the strategic side, it's actuarial credibility, competition from other professions, scope of work, actuarial role, expanded roles in areas like ERM, crisis communication, number of students, potential diminished volunteerism, employer support, catastrophe possibilities, and website risk. And as chair of the committee, the one thing I've tried to do is stick with these risks, because the task force did a lot of work in having a huge number of risks and narrowing them down to this. But as the task force left and new people come in, and probably as you in the audience look, everybody's got different ideas of what the top risks were. And I thought, well, we have to balance keeping a focus and moving forward with what the task force recommended and what the board approved, yet on the other hand, be fluid. And as new risks present themselves, we don't want to be so carved in stone that we don't address new risks. But we are going to try to get these addressed first, and then we can look to additional risks. So let's talk about these. Actuarial credibility, the key purpose of the CAS is to promote and maintain high standards of conduct and competence to the members. The failure of even a few to perform up to the high professional standards could weaken the reputation of the actuarial profession and reduce the demand for and the perceived value of actuaries. So that is just a clear, you know, high risk in the strategic realm. And this one is involved at the highest levels. The board, while our committee has representatives from each of the executive areas, the board is actually involved with this one. And the executive director, Cynthia Ziegler, is also involved. So there's a committee, the task force on enhancing the reputation of actuaries. So this risk is very high in our estimation. The next one comes from competition from other professions. Other professions have attempted to perform work normally reserved for casualty actuaries. The CAS can help mitigate this risk by showing the unique perspective and skill set provided by its members and by continuing to provide relevant training. So as you might expect, there's board involvement here. We also have the marketing and communications department involved and our training department involved. Scope of work. This involves our research area. Casualty actuaries must find a balance between broadening their field enough to provide interesting and rewarding work and keeping focus enough so that not to fall into the trap of working outside the area. So we want to be able to expand our scope and continue to grow, but we wouldn't want to become, you know, as they say, a mile wide and an inch deep. We want to keep focused enough, and we see this as a risk and an opportunity. Actuarial role. It's significantly affected by the public perception. There's been a perception that actuaries are backroom people who spin arcane models but do not understand business issues. This is directly from the task force report. Others must interpret their results for the general public. Imagine that. I mean, that's kind of an indictment, but certainly there are, a minority of our population that kind of exacerbate that role. And so we are working hard through the communications, through the education areas to monitor that risk. Expanded role, ERM and others. Actuaries are well positioned to measure risks on a consistent basis, deal with correlations, and build models to bring everything together in a holistic treatment of risk. I mean, this is really right down our alley. And so we want to make sure that we grow to the place that we can expand into ERM and other areas. So we have involved here John Kolar with the risk integration area, professional education, and research. We tried to stick to the task force report, and this is an exception, crisis communication. I don't know if you're with a company, if something bad happens, the network or some news anchor shows up, sticks a microphone in your face, and you have to respond. Something similar could happen with the CAS. Something, you know, really could go wrong that would require an immediate, that we immediately address it and communicate the situation. Now, generally, the American Academy is the voice of the actuarial profession, and they have a very well-documented, well-thought-out crisis communication plan, who's involved and how it goes through. But there may be situations that is so unique to the CAS that the American Academy wouldn't be in a position to respond. So we actually got a copy of the American Academy crisis communication plan, and we tailored it to the CAS in terms of how we would respond to a crisis that's just unique to the CAS. Number of students. You can see here, we're kind of switching from the strategic risk into operational now. This involves our admissions department. Daniel Roth is on our committee and represents admissions. And you can see that we've had nice growth overall in terms of people that were taking the CAS upper level exams, but there was a time where there was a decrease, and that, you know, you can see going from 2001 to 2002 to 2003, we were actually down almost 10%. And if that would continue, that would be a risk. Now, to the extent that we can keep the nice growth that we have going since then up with double digit here in the last few years, that's a nice opportunity. So this is a risk and an opportunity that we need to monitor and try to look forward as to how we can both manage and take advantage of this. Diminish volunteerism. The strategic planning subcommittee to review the threats and opportunities to the achieving the centennial goal thought that volunteerism per se permeates the entire centennial goal. It's the force that drives any success that the CAS might have in achieving goals. And I don't know if many of you volunteered in the past. It's very rewarding. This is my second committee that I've been on, and I would advocate that anybody try to volunteer. You meet a lot of really nice people. You can kind of get outside of your particular work area and learn from others, and it's been very rewarding to me. So it can both be a risk and a reward, and having increased volunteerism is what the board deems we need to hit this centennial goal. Employer support. Most of us are supported by employers, and I kind of, now that I'm on my own, I kind of really notice that. I stayed over at the Discount All-Star Resort. I took the bus to the Magic Kingdom, and you know, I saved $80. But you know, that's when you're paying for it, you kind of look for every $80 that you can find. But we are largely supported by our employers, and according to the 2003 membership survey, 89% of the respondents indicated that their employees pay their dues. 93% indicated that their employees pay for meeting seminar fees. Now, I would hope that if that did decrease, that people would still participate at high levels, but you can see that there is a correlation between the financial support that an employer gets and participation. Okay, another operational risk is catastrophe possibilities, and this is the one that we started with first and have probably addressed the most. The CAS faces risk to its operations from both man-made and the acts of nature. The primary tool for responding to a catastrophic event is the CAS's disaster recovery, communication, and management plan, and this plan is tested at least annually and reported on quarterly. I didn't know we had one, so you know, when this risk was on there, I kind of interviewed Todd Rogers at the CAS, and he said, oh yeah, here's our plan. He sent me a copy of it. It is like, you know, 15 pages long. It's very detailed on what would happen if either a man-made or a natural disaster caused our office in Arlington to shut down, and I was really impressed. It's very thorough, and not only is it written down, but it is embedded in that culture. They review it periodically, make updates. They've gone to training, and so I feel pretty secure that that if anything would happen, that the CAS is in position to respond. Website risk, another operational risk. We communicate and distribute information extensively through the CAS website. The CAS faces considerable risk to its operations should the website become inoperable, and the website also produces a great opportunity for us to grow. So those are just a little bit more detail on all of the top strategic and operational risks. And so what we're doing with them, each committee member has a particular risk or opportunity, and we are working on a report for each of them that briefly describes the risk, assigns the responsibility, describes the mitigation strategy, tries to quantify the risk, and then see how it's correlated with other risks, and then how do we monitor it. And really, that catastrophe risk we just started in December is the first one that we've kind of worked all the way through the process in terms of the task force risks. And you can see where it would be correlated to, say, website risk, and you could have multiple things going wrong at the same time. So at the end of the, when we finish the work, hopefully by the end of the year, we'll have a report for each of the risks, both strategic and opportunity, and that follows a similar format, and that we can monitor and make sure that we are addressing our risks and opportunities appropriately. And then we can always look for new risks, because it seems like the risk that gets you is the one that you were unaware of. So we'll always need to be proactive in looking for additional risks and opportunities. It is a holistic approach. This slide shows the members of our committee. We have an ERM committee in the center that has a representative from each of these areas: administration, admissions, international, marketing, communication, research, education, risk integration, and we just added a new one, the Strategic Planning Committee, which had been the Long-Range Planning Committee, has a new name now. And we have somebody from each of these committees, or each of these areas, represented on our committee. So we want to make it ERM embedded in the culture of the organization. So as we finish off our reports, we are communicating with the VP of each of these organizations such that they, you know, such with catastrophe risk, which is part of administration, that they are embedding that in their meetings, talking about it, making sure that they're comfortable with how we're handling it. So we've both got a ground up and a top down approach here, and that, you know, that it's holistic in nature. So in a nutshell, that is, you know, a case study of what we are doing at the CAS in terms of our applying ERM principles to the CAS, and that ends the presentation, and I'm open for any questions in that we might have. Yes, sir. Well, it's good question. The question is, how do we incorporate the financials of the CAS in? And it is within embedded in some of these risks and opportunities is certain financial consequences. If the number of students would decline, we get a lot of income from the exam process. So we have there's a report out there that shows. Kind of, it's a scenario testing. If it would decline by this much, what would be the financial impact, and so forth. Another one, the employee support. What would happen if we lost so many volunteers? What would that cost be? And it's, it's not like you can really, fit a log normal to it or anything, but you can kind of do some scenarios and try to figure, what might be the consequences. If there was a catastrophe, Todd Rogers spends a lot of time on this, and we buy insurance. If there would be a catastrophe, if right now a hurricane was hitting Florida and we had to cancel a meeting, we've got meeting fees. That's a part of the income of the CAS. So a lot of it, I didn't get into it in any specifics, but it is kind of embedded in the details of the reports. Good question. Bob? Yes. Yes. The question is, what were these risks prioritized? And they were. The prioritization was actually done at that task force level. When the board authorized the ERM task force, they went through that process of mapping where they had numerous risks outlined, and then they would get together, talk them through, kind of, put numerical values on them. And so these risks that we just talked about were the ones that popped out at the top. And so that's, that was kind of, so as the task force ended and now you get a new committee and we look at the risks and opportunities, the first meeting was, maybe I think this risk is more important than one that we have on the list. And so you always kind of balance, probably the hardest thing is to balance doing what the board has authorized us to do with these risks, but yet being fluid enough to recognize that things are changing all the time, to the extent that you wouldn't want to have your head in the sand and so carved in stone that you stuck to these risks and opportunities when one that was more important surfaced. And I can say the crisis communication plan is one that we added as a committee that was not on the original task force report, because it just seemed, something really went wrong and we were either slow or unable to respond, it could really be a reputational risk to us. Good question. Other questions? Yes, sir. Okay.
Right.
For Social Security.
CAS, but somehow I think that what we do needs to be integrated with a similar type of plan for other actuarial areas in the United States, because the public doesn't perceive CAS to be anything.
Yeah.
They'll just know that there's actuaries out there.
Right.
What it is they do, I'm not too sure, but it's got something to do with math and something to do with insurance.
But, you know, it's an excellent point, and Steve Darcy and I were having a conversation last night, and you know, he was discussing one of the key points here is that we are trying to be an example such that when we come up with this ERM process, one of the key endpoints is we want to share that with others so that maybe we can all learn together. Maybe they will share what they, you know, other societies will share with us what they are doing, and we can learn from them so that we can, you know, be more together. Then the second thing that comes to mind is with the crisis communication plan that we've written up, it's not exactly to a situation like you're talking about, but would we have a crisis? And as we get this report out, one of the things we want to stress is that, you know, we don't want any of actuaries out in practice responding on behalf of the actuarial society in terms of a position, you know, that would be involved in this crisis communication plan. The crisis communication plan clearly articulates who should be involved, right up to the president and the executive director of the CAS, and that, you know, they will be the spokespersons for the CAS. And that's just crucial. I mean, think about it in a company situation. You don't want, if something happens at a company, you don't want the first person out the door to be giving the company position to the stations and the newspapers. You want to have a plan, and by having a plan, that also will allow us to respond more quickly, because if there's a void, it's going to be filled by someone. And so those are good points. I do know that the SOA is, and I have talked to the chair of their committee, and it's kind of, as we're both evolving, we are going to be sharing back and forth, yeah. Or at least certainly we'll be sharing. But yes. Good point. Anything else? Other questions? Bob? Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's the thing. Right. Yeah, we do want to, you know, be an example, practice what we preach, and especially to the extent so many of us would be involved professionally in ERM and other organizations, we want to make sure that we are doing it for our society and that we do communicate that. Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? I thank you for your attention and your participation. And I guess this ends the ERM track, and wish safe travels to everyone on their way home. Thank you.